Dave Dave's internet just sucked. So now Dave's just, it literally says he will return when his internet gets better.
Is that what it says?
That's,
that's what it says for me.
That's fascinating. Oh, yeah. I definitely don't, but who knows?
It says,
so the funny part is for the user, Dave will be there the whole time because Dave is technically uploading his video file and audio file to the cloud. So when I cut the whole thing, Dave will be there. But for Ross and I right now, Dave knows that key.
Didn't Dave say something about his internet being cocks?
No, fuck no. I ain't got no cocks. Fuck that.
You got no cocks? Fuck no. Boy, Dave ain't got no cocks.
Nope.
I thought you said you were dealing with cocks. No, singular.
Yeah.
Mm. Man.
Yeah, I couldn't afford cocks. So I just got cock internet. No, not that kind of
cock. Right, that's
fucking nice.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah. It's been like 45 minutes just making cocks internet jokes. Yeah.
I can still intro the show later. So it's like I can come in and do it whenever I want. Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
And I'm Dave. Well, there it is.
Later, Dave. Sorry, podcast about anything and everything off-road. Tonight, we are going to be a little all over the place. It's typically how we normally do it. I'm in the Midwest. Ross is in the Northeast. Dave is down in Texas. Actually, in his home tonight. Normally, he's from the ranch. But...
That's all we know.
This is the first time we've established that Dave has a home that isn't the ranch.
Well, I probably didn't last time.
Well, okay, so yeah.
It's so, like I know that you posted it as I was digitally stalking, but it was like 22 weeks ago. So
22.
Yeah, I moved here like,
and we would have talked like. 52-ish.
I guess congratulations.
Now, where we're just gonna shit all over each other for a minute. I don't understand what happened. My internet was so excited before we started going, and then it fell off a cliff. Or
either so the good news is,
void or
I can do magic on the back end and make it work either way. So yeah, it won't be AI based; it'll be Chris based. But
slide it around. Since the last time I talked to you guys. I moved into a house down the street, quarter mile down the street from the ranch. So I have just enough space between me and the ranch that I can still hear things that are happening. And I'm like, that shouldn't be happening. And I can just peek out my front door like a man and like watch cars come down the road and be like, yeah, okay. But I'm not at work, technically.
What have you heard that you were able to decipher or discern that, no, that should not be a noise I hear from my business?
Well, so there's you know, I'm sitting in my house and I'm like, what V8 is running? Well, there's a very small number of V8s on the facility. My Chevy Colorado rally truck that has an LS2 in it would be one of the only things that, but that's definitely not running. Now it's driving, definitely shouldn't be driving. Like, what in God's name? And then I was like, that's not an LS, that's an iron block, like that's a truck motor. And I'm like, but nothing
like
that,
if somebody's on the property kind of thing.
Yeah, and then I finally I was uncomfortable enough that I drove over there and I was like, oh, Andy, one of our instructors has an E46 with a 5.3 swap in it. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. But it was very stressful. Yeah, okay. That thing.
Like a rock. Oh, like a rock.
Look at that thing. With the Christmas
it's
livery.
So good.
With a super
Colorado. Not call it Coco.
Well, we call it Coco.
Definitely.
Wait,
hold on. What name is on the side of it? Hot Snakes?
Tommy Hot Snakes, yeah. Yeah.
Not hot ones, hot snakes.
Yeah. Yeah, also, no, Tommy Hot Snakes is a whole other logo.
Technically platform correct. There was a V8 first gen Colorado.
That's true. So, there was. That's true.
And it was a 5.3.
It was a 5.3, and it had the AR5 or whatever the hell that horrible five-speed thing is in it that's like a 62-foot throw from first to second?
Good lord. I think it was a 4L60E.
Yeah, maybe, sure. I don't think
it was anything interesting.
Whatever you said. Well, yeah, you're right. The five-cylinder had the, I think, had the, I don't know, dude, the AR5
that, or something. Yeah. You get to stick with a five-cylinder and, like, rear drive or something.
Yeah, the Isuzu five-cylinder.
It really did put a V8?
Remarkably horrible in those. Like, truly one of the worst engine and vehicle combinations of all time. And I know somebody who, he, to this day, absolutely diehard. He has the most obscene, unnecessary Colorado pre-runner. It's a Canyon, sorry. It's the Canyon Arrow pre-runner that you've ever seen, including like full cage and all the crazy stuff, and then a tiny seat mounts for his children in the back of it so that he can take them pre-running in Mexico, and insists on his life, despite all of the LS swaps he's done and 8-in-1 headers and all of the amazing skills that he has. He's like, nope, five-cylinder forever. He's on his third one, but he just loves the five-cylinder against all good judgment.
What color is it?
Yeah.
Oof. Is it
tannish?
Yeah, that champagne tan. Flesh? That horrible flesh? Champagne tanness. It's Old Dirty Roy, ODR MSE. It's not
Caucasian.
Yeah, I think I got it.
There's two sides of a five cylinder. There's like high performance.
Come on,
Volkswagen, where they get, you know, 600 like crank horsepower out of intake, tune, downpipe, and like that's pretty much it. And then there's this five cylinder, which makes you question every piece of the business case that was put together to produce this vehicle.
Well, no, the business case for this was, hey, man, y'all check this out right here. You know that company makes those box trucks named after that radio station? They're like the Isuzu NTR. They're like, yeah, that one, man. They also make a truck, like a pickup truck. We just buy, you know how we do. I put bow tie right front and center. Colorado, that's an American state. It also is a Mexican word probably, but that'd be awesome as hell. Let's sell it. Let's put our shit on, man. Make the headlights look like one of them Silverados. A little tiny one. It'd be awesome. They're like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Silverado. It was more like
Old Dirty Roy with his
y'all want four cylinder power and 8-cylinder fuel mileage. Here you go.
Not even 4-cylinder power. It's like, do you want to drive something that feels like an Acura TSX with a misfire with 270,000 miles on it, but with an automatic transmission out of an 85 Corolla?
Worse.
Do we have the combo for you?
Worse.
No, thank you, please.
It's too bad, because they really could have done a lot of good shit with that platform. Like, the H3T Alpha was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, but they were like, given we didn't, this wasn't.
There was so much almost good in there, and it just never.
There was
never
also so much severe bad in the American economy. So, anyways.
Yeah. Agreed.
There are not a lot of good H3T photos.
No, especially H3T Alphas. They had that crazy slant back cap thingamajig. They were so good. That was like the only good thing that came out of Hummer as a company.
You know what's saving me right now is Cars and Bids. It's giving me somebody
this
listed one.
Is Chris looking for pictures of an H3?
No, I already got it. Because it's Cars and Bids, so the image comes right up.
That was my joke. You missed my job.
Nah, I know it's Doug.
Yeah. I'm into this. Yeah, man, I need to build an H3T, dude.
What is also 5.3, and I think they were selectable four-wheel drive, which
so good.
Basically, made it an Avalanche with, I guess, 10% less.
Oh my gosh!
Space.
I'm
sorry, I've never looked at the interior of an H3T before.
Oh, it's not good. it's not good, but the thing that about the 2015 Colorado, that was it, 2015 to 2021, it's kind of the same interior. They just like picked it up and pushed it somewhere else.
We call that they GM'd it.
That was a SpongeBob joke for anybody that was listening. and just pick it up and
wait. How man, I wonder how.
So yeah, yeah, Ross, you're right, because the buttons are right there in the middle.
That's the shape. Also, the same shit that is damn near the same shifter as the Colorado and Canyon had for like 6 years.
It's the same steering wheel. It's basically the same dash shape that they've just sort of macheted the edges of, and then they just like hit it with a heat gun and just shoved it into that area. And and the whole situation just reeks of, yeah, I don't know, well, close enough. This is like, this all looks like a company that definitely should not have been bailed out by the U.S. government. But we were like, oh, man, yeah. You know, like, you know,
dude, don't bail this out. Isn't it fucking crazy going back that, like, two-thirds of America's largest automakers got bailed out and only one of them, like, didn't have to take it? It's
yeah. Having, I mean, it's 0% surprising, but it's pretty remarkable. But it's okay now, guys.
There's so much going on.
One of our big three is now sounds like either a scene or like a base in a Marvel movie. Stellantis.
It sounds more like an erectile dysfunction drug.
I was gonna say it sounds like ED medicine.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Bathtub next to a lake at sunset. Make sure you take your Stellantis.
Ask your doctor about Stellantis. Yeah. Stellantis might be right for you.
No switch is working at 35,000 miles.
Do you own a Caliber SRT4? Because then you should ask your doctor about Stellantis.
I think, Dave, I think you guys should name one of the campsites down there as the Stellantis campsite. Like, just.
Yeah.
It's is it for lovers or people who just want to have shitty cars?
KY and Trojan hanging from the ceiling.
Oh, this is so brutal.
Sorry, dude.
Sorry, Stellantis. I have the Stellantis product coming next week. I should be nice to them.
Which you one? Should be nice.
I have the second Ram 2500 Rebel that I'm driving coming next week. So
again, like you just had one like 2 months ago,
dude. That was actually like in the winter. Isn't that crazy?
That was last winter.
That was last winter. Yeah, yeah. Hmm. So, but it might change because the trip that I was supposed to use that for isn't happening. So I don't need a very large pickup. So
certainly not with that attitude.
Yeah. No. He lives in Connecticut. Large pickups for him are like not ideal.
Like, dude, my favorite is going anywhere else in the world. You know, you go to New Zealand and I roll in. I'm with the 2017 New Zealand Rally Champion. This is like in the end of 2017 or early 2018. We're going to Leadfoot. We roll in. It's like, you own the shop's got all the cars. We're like, all right, we're going to load up your championship winning car. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, mate, let me go get the ute. Rolls out and up Ford Ranger and backs it up to a single axle car hauler, and we throw three plastic posts in the back of that thing.
Single axle car hauler?
Oh yeah, like a fucking snowmobile trailer, and we roll his TP4 car on there, and strap it down with tie downs that are millimeters wide, not inches.
It's weird how in other countries, like in Germany or Japan, the dick measuring contest is by way of performance. But in America, the dick measuring contest is big. Just go big. It doesn't matter what you can do with it.
It performs pretty damn good on a cat scale inside of a Love's truck stop. Okay. Look how high.
Oh, my God.
You don't want to know what happens inside of Love's truck stop.
Well, I do.
I would say Dave spent enough time on the road. He does.
I tell you what.
You feel a lot of meats in a foot-long Subway sub. I'm just saying.
There is opportunity in going around and measuring Subway foot-long subs.
Nope. You're on your own with that one, dude. Nope. I'm out.
The Massachusetts. You know what they say about the Massachusetts foot-long?
No, what do they actually? I'm nervous.
I'm saying no.
I'll let you know next weekend.
Are you going there next weekend? Because otherwise it's very weird.
I'm passing through.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a really uncomfortable sex move. Yeah, she gave me the old footlong. What?
Ah! How do you spell that?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Massachusetts, I can never spell that.
You spell that call 911.
Yeah, accurate.
Jesus. Wow, that really...
We really
went. That firework went right off into the weeds, didn't it?
Well, I mean, as soon as you were in the H3 Alpha, you knew that this was going poorly.
Homie, I brought up the SSR in an article I was writing today, so my brain is off in Never Never Land. Although,
do you want to talk about what's at your house right now?
Sure.
At your house?
At Ross's house. I mean, it is very likely this could swing by Dave's house. So
it could. It's about the size of Texas. I have the suburban high country with a slew of options, including this gangster LED light that some of the GM stuff has on the fold-out running boards. So you unlock
it. Is the puddle light not enough?
It has a Chevy bow tie puddle light that comes down from the hatch onto the floor in the back. Yeah, no, that one's not. It's not enough, obviously.
I like it. It's ridiculous.
Chris, I told you how much this thing cost. Dave, you want to guess what the price of a 3-liter diesel baby Duramax Suburban is?
Well, decently optioned high country, $77,500.
$91,000.
Yeah.
It's fucking money.
That's so much money. Good Lord.
I drove it probably 4 miles so far, and I'll put another 200 on it in the next, I don't know, 48 hours. But in those couple miles, I was reminded that this engine is my favorite engine on sale today. Yeah. It is... The 3-liter diesel is just like, it's super smooth. It gets amazing gas mileage. And then, like, you put your foot down and it just fucking goes.
Dude, so I had the 3-liter, the OM642 in the Sprinter diesel in a Grand Cherokee, in an 08 Grand Cherokee, which was the best daily ever. And then CRD. I bought a 21 Ram 1500 with the 3-liter diesel, I drive, which is perfect, because that thing that got the we called it COVID suspension, which was, what does turn 14 have in stock? Well, King's in the front and Fox is in the rear. So
okay, so, and, that's a way to
it works. It's good. Setup of the vehicle, it gets my that's like the test rig for all of our off-road like track that we build. So we do our Tor is our Texas off-road enthusiast like pre-runner race series. So we you can run a street truck or full pre-runner or race truck, whatever you want.
Is the truck four-wheel drive or is it two-wheel drive?
Mine?
Yeah.
I know my hair's long, and I know you might think I'm some kind of dirty hippie, but I ain't no two-wheel drive dirty hippie. Come on now.
If you're just pre-running, you never know.
No, it's not possible. I don't think I can ever buy another two-wheel drive truck. I'm with you, though. You can have a two-wheel drive truck if it has 40s and they belong there. Other than that, your truck should not be two-wheel drive. And even there, like, trophy trucks have even realized that, like, two-wheel drive is – that's quickly going to disappear. Yeah, so these guys show up and they run this track. And before they come, I always do test laps in the Ram so that when they complain about something, I'm like, well, I mean, I did jump it in my basically stock Ram 1500. And they're like, yeah, okay, fine.
With Kings and Fox.
With my bargain bin, like dollar Walmart DVD suspension. Just like, yeah, whatever, I'll take it.
Yep.
But it works good, man. And you're right. It's like, I love all of them. I love all of those 3-liter diesels. I haven't spent enough time
small with the Chevy diesels.
Yeah.
Dude, the 3-liter diesel that Chevy and GMC use, like, it's just like perfect. It does everything well. It's, oh God.
It's a straight six, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a straight six. It's quiet and it acts like a normal engine. And then you put your foot down and it is just like full diesel, full torque immediately. If I could replace the engine in my truck with any engine. For a while, I was like, oh, 4BT would be nice, you know, like 35 miles per gallon. And, you know, just no issues. Or like an LS3 would be nice. But this 3-liter diesel, that the baby Duramax.
LM2, baby. I'm looking at it right now. Hey, you can't argue with that. 2.8 liters. Then there's the 3-liter. And then now you got the... The
3-liter is where it's at.
The 3-liter, right. Hang on, I'm trying to see. What are the specs on the 23 one? They're like, what, 400 pounds of torque or 460? Oh, whatever.
I should know.
Yeah, there it is. 460 pound-feet of torque, 277 horsepower. That's
270.
Just, those are basically identical numbers to my Subaru Rally car last year. And I spent as much as a truck on that engine package. So,
I mean, it probably weighs a couple hundred pounds less than.
Yeah.
That. There's no. Let's see how 3-liter Duramax weight.
I'm reading your description because I know. So, Ross, I got the Michelins installed on my Suburban. I don't have photos yet, and I'll take pretty pictures as soon as I get them. They are very functioning as wheels. I'm very excited for it. Or as tires. Good Lord, not wheels.
I hope your Michelin tires are functioning as wheels.
Considering I'm the guy who corrects my children when they talk about wheels versus tires, I better get it right on here. Good Lord. Sometimes one of my kids watches if it's live. Who knows if Riverside went live tonight or not? Good question.
Hi, Joel.
But, yeah, the road noise went away that I've been suffering with on the left front. So, like, it was the old tire that was definitely doing that.
You got it aligned?
Yeah, definitely got it aligned. But as you always love that, like, mid-service check-in from the service advisor. And I'm like, fuck, what is it now?
Notice that your front differential is bad.
Front
struts.
But
there's no inspection point in my front diff. Well, we noticed it. Well, eat my dick. Well,
front struts are starting to weep. And I was like, cool. So now my prospective maintenance list, first being listed most important, is it's going to need pads and rotors in the back soon. I'm aware of that. I'm stopping close to 6,000 pounds fairly regularly. Like, I knew that was coming. Radiator and heater hoses are suspected of leaking. It has been losing coolant over time. I just put a little more in.
Sounds like Land Cruiser.
Yeah. Like oil cooler lines. And... Yep, just keep putting that coolant in there. We're fine.
Uh-huh.
And so the front struts now too. So lift kit.
The lines with things.
Yeah. But also I can just put a lift kit on it and then not have to worry about the front struts or the rear ones. And
what
that.
Is that thing? What vehicle is this?
My 2017 Chevrolet Suburban. So the thing that I use to drive my kids. So it's got the MagnaRide ones. And so I don't want to pay. And now they have 190,000 miles on these.
Which is pretty good. Because if you replace MagnaRide on like a CTS-V or something at 80,000 miles, it's like a $4,000 or $5,000 operation.
Yeah, it's a lot. So... I've got some emails out to a couple of suspension companies. I'm probably going to send more. God help us.
Yep.
I just
we'll make something happen.
It sits like too much of a race car now. I loved when I had the leveling kit on it, but I understood why I took it off because it was making noises and I couldn't find the noise and that irritated the fuck out of me. I do think I figured out what the noise was now. And a lift kit will solve that. So.
Yeah, just plus it was bad as hell. When you drop the kids off at school, all the other mans is going, no, man, this ain't playing no games, dude. Look at that right there. He's so Jimmy Jack, he could drive over any of our curbs. It'd be awesome.
I had it with a leveling kit on it, but I bumped it in the back up too. And so, hold on, let me get my window up here. Bam. So this is what it looked like with the leveling kit on it, Dave. It looked pretty good.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
I fucking last year, like so violently, it was obscene. It's somewhere on our Instagram. Somebody showed up to our rally sprint with one as a rental, and I was like, well, I mean, if you like to party, I like to party anyway. Sorry, you were saying.
No, hold on. You can keep talking because I'm going to try and find the video of you jumping up rental Suburban now. I think
it's just
now.
A photo, and it's like the most beautiful photo ever taken. It's just a head-on shot of a silver Suburban. I don't know if it's on my page or on Rally Ready's, but it's just the front of a silver Suburban. A good like foot and a half in the air off of a big rally tabletop that we built.
Good for that.
And the thing is, it jumps very well. It lands like the end of Solitaire in Windows 95. But it jumped good. It's just what goes up, that nice land, and then it gives you a boing, 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 all the way to the end of time. They say it's still bouncing. We'll find you a suspension package.
Also, I'm just to follow up the conversation before, I'm seeing that the 3-liter Duramax is about 500 pounds completely undressed.
That sounds lighter than a 4BT, because I think 4BTs are 600 to 700 pounds.
Is it?
4BTs are giant.
They're heavy engines.
Boat anchors.
4BT, holy fuck, it's 800 pounds for a 4BT.
I got close.
But that might be with accessories.
Yeah, it's a 4-liter, you know, 4-cylinder or a 3-liter. Yeah, exactly. Or a new 3-liter, one of them aluminiatized. Ooh, I'm just saying. Wholesale on the Fox coilovers, the 2.0s for the Burb. Is this a front or a rear?
I already love that Dave's looking this up mid-show.
$400. Wholesale on those things is like $400 a shock, dude.
Dave's like, we can rebuild this. We can make him stronger.
No, certainly we don't rebuild it. Absolutely not. Whoa, easy now. Yeah, I guess, is that thing still leaf spring?
No, it's coils in the rear.
Okay, all right. Hey, man, listen. We just saw what the H3T Alpha looked like, but a decade and change ago. Let's not get all high and mighty about GM wouldn't do that. Meanwhile, transverse leaf springs. Get out of here.
100%.
The Corvette had leaf springs until a very recent.
100%. My suspension. My suspension setup was developed in like 2005. It's just so happens that the shocks in the front and the back are MagnaRide shocks. Everything else is like 2007 on until we got to 2020.
Also,
the reality is it was probably designed in like 2001, and there was some engineer that's like, hey guys, check it out, here's something we could do. This is kind of similar to what Toyota started doing in like 1986, and GM was like,
yeah, we ain't gonna do that, it looks expensive.
Yeah, GM's not, they're not smoking anything though. That's too progressive for
it's a cigar, dude. Don't sorry, cigar. I should have had a
yeah, the context, dude. The context would have been good. Like a little like clip and that some context on the big all inhale would have been good.
Yeah.
I'm definitely clipping that part out. Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely. Save that one for spank bag boy. A good one later. Yeah. All right, well, the good news is there's some options for Shockey Boys, okay? I'm just saying, I think that you get the full coilover from Fox, you're looking at $400 a corner. Now, if you want to cut that down and just go to the conventional 4600 series Bilstein, looking at $100 a corner. That's an easy win there. Now, if you want to go to the quick, what do they call this, the front quick lift loaded Ranchos, can kill yourself. But those are $176 that will... You'll spend the $400 about 2 weeks later after you do that. Man, you got all kinds of good options. 5,100 Bilsteins, $120.
5,100 are always there.
The only question that lingers in my mind is what computers are doing, like what's talking to MagnaRide right now. Like to the is there some kind of math happening? Because you do have to plug them in.
I guarantee you there's somebody has like some real bootleg Raspberry Pi MagnaRide delete computer that you buy for $125. You plug it in and it's really probably just a paperclip in like a Mentos. You know, and you just like plug a thing in and then it's like, oh yeah. And you're like, why does this thing look like an Altoids tin? Because it is. Mm-hmm. But I I promise you it's probably not that complicated. Or I'm wrong and it's the exact opposite and it goes through like 13 Bosch computers and then it somehow goes stereo and now you only have AM radio if you delete MagaRide.
This
as long as I keep my Android Auto, I'm fine.
Like a question for somebody more in tune with magnetic ride control than we are.
So the shitty part for me
are the sounds of it.
If it was up to us, we'd be like, yep, nope, you're good. Just fucking swap everything out. What could possibly
I heard
be wrong?
Dave
and
say,
he turns it on and all the fucking lights are on and he can't
Dave said
truck.
Just bring it to the ranch and we'll blow shit out and it'll be fine. Yeah, like that's what I heard.
Dave said there's a fuse you could pull and everything will be okay.
I mean, honestly, worst case scenario, you just need a little piece of electrical tape around that area of the dash wherever the lights come on. You just cover those up. Be all right. Ain't nothing.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Oh, hi, Wolf.
I'm still browsing for the Suburban photo.
I don't think really can't say what I was about.
Oh, man, I'll have to look and see.
Oh, boy. I can't say that. Anyways, Dave, how are you? How's life?
Oh, man, it's fine. What's going on in my life? I have a giant corporate event in about 10 hours that starts. We have about 80 to 90 people coming to the ranch.
Ooh, I didn't know about that one.
What's
How
that?
Do you?
I said I didn't know about this corporate one. I knew about dates coming up, but that's a new one.
Oh no, every day is something. So we have a corporate event tomorrow, which will mean we're giving rides in UTVs. We're doing rides in rally cars, cater barbecue. We didn't bring the helicopter for this one, but we are. What else we do? Oh, we have mini motos from Red Bull, and it's probably gonna be raining, so we're gonna have a bunch of people show up and ride mini motos on a gravel flat track in the rain.
All right, hold on.
Yes.
Yeah.
are we talking OEMs or are we talking?
No, just like I don't actually even know what this company is, but it's a software company or a creative agency or something. Somebody was like, somebody who works there was like, hey, I should go to rally school and get my boss to pay for it, and so they, internally.
I mean, fuck yeah, why?
My boss to do that. He's not going to do it, but I need him to.
It works. It's remarkable how well that works. When you we literally, it's so good. So now we've got a whole system where you can just email us and be like, hey, I want to do a corporate event. How do I pitch it to my boss? And we're like, oh, no problem. And then we will interview them about their boss and their workspace and their team. We'll give them all of the tools and the things that they need to say. We'll tell them how to go about the initial pitch, how to make the intro, pass them off to us. Mike and my sales team is an absolute genius, gets it all teed up, set up, closed. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're like, what? I'm hanging out of a helicopter chasing a rally car around where my coworkers are in the rally car and I'm not paying anything for this. And I'm probably staying like at the W after this and, going to a sushi restaurant.
I like the W.
it's how a car guy tailors a business retreat for their own personal benefit.
Retreat.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. Business retreat is really
That sounds fun.
Like that.
How do you host?
So we've got that, and then
also what UTVs are you using?
Oh, I still have our old Wildcat XX. We have a bunch of other stuff that's been out here, but we just pulled that thing quite literally out of like mothballed. We're like, we should use this. We own this. So we pulled it out and cleaned it and fixed a bunch of stuff, and we're like, hey, this thing's great. UTVs are so funny. It's like a 3 to 5 year old UTV. You're just like, oh yeah, no, that's old.
The first owner treated it like shit.
Yeah, and that was me. And I was also the second owner, and I also treated it like shit. I was the third, fourth, and the fifth owner. It's been treated horribly for all of those.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, that's it. So we have that tomorrow, and then our tour season finale is Saturday, which is our off-road series. We've done that for, I think tour is our third or fourth season, but we've been doing the track days for Raptors, TRXs, pre-runners for 6 or 7 years. And those are super fun because it's it's this, especially in Texas, like Raptor is the new Lariat. You know, it's like you show up and you're like, well, I mean, I wouldn't want to knock it off Raptor. I should obviously just get Raptor. So everybody's got these things. Nobody has anything to do with them. So our track, I did a huge overhaul on it this week because one of my guys was like, hey man, so like this other place we go to, they've got this one tabletop and it's super awesome. And like, you can just like stay flat. Yeah. So that jump now is, up to the taillight on the TRX high.
What?
And
Jesus.
And the it's now the landing starts where the headlight is now. Yeah, and then
okay. Tapers. What so speed do you have to hit it at in order to not have a severe problem?
Oh no, it's really the nice thing about it is like you go slow, you're fine. That's kind of how I've always designed them, but these guys now are like, you know, going fast enough that it's like, okay, well, fine. You want to party? Let's party. So now I have it set to where you can stay flat all the way out of the corner before, and you shouldn't really need to check up much, if at all, for the, for the old
finish. So it's a soft tabletop.
Yeah, but even there, like the way you launch on those, you don't fly. It's not like it's not super lippy, so it's a float. And so if you go up short, you just case the top and roll over. It's not a like super harsh edge on the on the transition.
Kind of what Hoonigan has done with their this versus that, series.
Yeah,
it's like it looks great on camera when the camera's down, below your hip, but it's actually very soft.
You kind of have to. Like, the reality is, it's
you don't want people coming to your place to completely fuck up their stuff.
Yeah,
because then they're
they do that on their own accord just fine.
Yeah,
they don't need my help.
Oh my god, I've never seen a ZJ in the air like that.
Isn't it great? I love it.
Doesn't
that
look
thing.
Like there's much ZJ left. But
no, it's that thing's real spicy. Yeah, the oddball dudes are wild, man. That thing parties real hard.
I just remembered. I took a picture this past weekend. There is a guy downtown in my city that has three silver 5.9 ZJs parked on on his lot. They're like 5.9s aren't like a normal thing around here.
That sounds like my photo of quintessential suburbia the other day with three white Suburbans within 15 feet of each other in my driveway.
I'm going to try to find it and send it to you, Chris. It was a puzzling thing to see. Shit.
Three of anything is always funny.
Yeah.
But it's also the magic number.
5.9, that's a real wild. I'm with you. That's a pretty wild vehicle to just have a bunch of.
It is. I tried to buy one once upon a time and it was not good.
It was not good?
I can't even think of the last time I would have seen a 5.9.
The guy promised that it was fine and then we drove like 100 yards from his house and I braked for a stop sign and the thing just shut off. And I tried to start it 100 yards from his house and it wouldn't start. He was like, I promise this has never happened before. I was like,
yeah, bullshit.
Dude, really? You're telling me you drive this daily? Come on, man.
I have a gift for you in our chat here that you can look at. It is in fact, the Suburban in question.
How'd you find it?
It's in my tagged photos. And I scrolled back.
Oh, holy fuck, Dave.
Right back to Hertz.
Oh my gosh. This one hurts my soul, Ross.
I have another one. Look at this. Oh, this one's good too.
Oh my god. Look how high it is.
Wait, punch in on that. That's a current Z71.
Yeah. Oh, that was fresh. That was a 3,000 mile rental that it aged 3 years that day.
Press car, hopefully.
Yeah, I have a second angle as well. That's even better. You'll really like.
Who's behind the wheel on that? Is that you?
Oh yeah, that's definitely me. That was me being like, so you're sure you want to let me take this around your rental? You want to let me take it around the track and then give it back to you? Yeah, that's the one. Dude, oh god,
they signed all of the waivers. They pay for all of the insurance.
You can see it's Dave behind the wheel.
This was definitely.
Can you zoom in, Chris? Can you punch?
I forgot how good this is. It makes me so happy.
It's not giving me more options, Ross.
Homie, if you ever want to do a modern Smokey and the Bandit,
enhance.
You got your fucking car right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that thing.
You can fit a whole lot.
That's as big as it's
of,
gonna get.
Whole lot of beer in the back of one of those things too. So.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Man, that was fun. Yeah, that.
That was good.
It landed real bad, but. I mean, I let's say it flew well and it landed level. It just was real bouncy, you know.
Your spot.
That, actually, funny. We mentioned Ranchos. That thing has the old factory Ranchos, and they are.
They are not large tubes for what that weight needs.
Yeah, no, no, no. The formula, the weight to tube diameter ratio is significantly lower than my preferred numbers. Somebody forgot to pair one on that.
The joke is not good, Bob, and that is not good, Bob.
That is not good, Bob.
Speaking of landing and taking off, can we talk about the peak? About the old Pike's Peak?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were going to... I could have gone so many different ways. I was like, are we going to helicopter F1 delivery? Are we going to talk about what flying things are we talking about here? Yeah. Well,
okay, so... Yeah, no, back up then. Let's talk about F1.
I was like, hold on, doesn't your lady also, isn't she a pilot? So, like, I wasn't sure.
Well, we're both really bad at actually getting our hours, but yeah, she flies more than I do. Sure.
So, between helicopters and pilot time.
All right. Did you guys see the, that whole affair? Like, did you see the actual, official Red Bull stunt for this?
No.
So this was how Red Bull delivered. So each of the U.S. races gets gets its own special livery. And so for the U.S. GP, we got a call from our buddy Alex at Red Bull, and he was like, okay, so for the livery reveal, here's what I'm thinking. We're going to get Brandon to fly the helicopter, and we're going to put it on like a platform and fly that shit in. Mm-hmm. We're like, fly it into where? He's like, to Oracle's campus downtown. We're like, okay, yeah, sure. So. Sure enough, I get a call from Brandon. He's like, hey, man, you going to build us this platform for this thing so I can fly it in? And I was like, yeah, you got it, man.
Sure.
Then a lot of things happen. A few months go by. And then 3 weeks before USGP, they're like, hey, can you still build that? And I was like, I guess. And so we called our buddy Nate Wessel, who is currently living at Pastrana Land doing stuff with Travis for Channel 199. Nate designed it in SketchUp, flew in. We got a bunch of materials, built it in 2 days. And then had to get the engineering stamp for it because, you know, that's how that works. We had to design and build the whole thing, then get the engineering stamps. And then it was so that what you just saw was the test flight. So that was the first time the car had been loaded. We flew it around the ranch twice, did two tests. Everything was good. And then we loaded it up. I sent two teams with two trucks and trailers, one with the platform and then one enclosed because nobody'd seen the livery. So we had to keep it secret, all packaged up. And we went to a staging area and we had explicit instructions that were be on standby, but be ready to load out because if we don't get an insurance certificate, then we're not doing this and we're going to have you just bring the car and roll it in. So we were on standby, like maybe we're going to fly this in with a helicopter or maybe we're just going to unload it at a trailer and push it. We have no idea. And the cert came in 28 minutes before takeoff. We got the insurance policy.
Of course it did.
Yeah, so we loaded it on the platform, strapped it down, took off, flew through downtown Austin, or over the river, I should say, and then we delivered it to Oracle's campus where Max and Checo and Christian Horner and the whole team were all hanging out, and everybody was just like, what? This is the most absurd livery reveal of all time. I mean, literally, this photo, those four pieces of Harbor Freight rope were being cut at like... 12:30 p.m. and this photo was taken at 5 p.m. So and that whole platform, this was on this was on Thursday, and that whole platform was built the previous Friday or something like that, or Wednesday. We built it a week and a half earlier, painted it underneath. There's Red Bull lettering.
Yeah.
So Nate, when he built it, he cut out the Red Bull logo, welded on the bottom, and then I messaged him and was like, hey, can I get the hex code for the Red Bull Racing Red so that we can cut it on our print it and cut it on our vinyl cutter and, you know, or our vinyl printer and lay it on there. And they're like, oh yeah, it's got like a fluorescent effect though. It's technically our own proprietary color. We'll just overnight you a roll of it from Red Bull Racing. So we have a roll of this Red Bull Racing Red that's literally their own proprietary fluorescent sort of metallic And I was like, that's silly. We could have just printed red. We put it on there and it took off. And I was like, that was not silly. That was the right choice. That looks so good.
Yeah. First of all, the funny part about this is the joke about everybody being able to see the floor when the secret is the floor. And also, I work kind of tangentially with a company that sponsors Red Bull. And the color, the hex codes for everything is like lockdown is not even close to being the right phrase for it.
Yeah.
But
so strange.
How does this tie into the video of you pushing a car, pushing one of the Red Bull cars through what looked like an airport?
Oh, that's so we've been managing these cars for Red Bull for like 3 years. So it started out with one. And then became two last year, and then this year it became three and then four. So we and it's usually just during like the month or two leading up to the race, and then this year it's that, but then that car that you see in the video now lives with us full time. So that's our own. We just have it's a static car. It doesn't have a powertrain or anything in it, but that just lives at the ranch. So so now we just have an F1 car laying around. So, and then of course I decided that we were after USGP, we brought the other three cars. We had all of them together. We were waiting on the fourth car to come, but we had the three cars together. Yeah, this. And I was like, well, you know, when do you have three F1 cars and you're like bootleg? Look, you can see the holes in the wall of this building. Like when do you have three cars together? And then just a Celine GT4 car in the background. So I thought it would be funny. I made this video just to send to my buddy at Red Bull. And the joke is in the video, I'm saying a little known fact, F1 teams, the cars are disposable. They throw them away after the race because it's too expensive. So we got Max's car, Checo's car, and they're not supposed to have backup cars, but we got their backup car and all of the spares. Just hang out after the race, find somebody, make friends in the paddock. And then if you bring cash, you can take cars home. And this video has 4 million views, and the number of people who have commented, and I quote, how cheap, and the number of DMs that I've gotten that people are like, bro, how much would you trade it for my 96 Bronco? Like, it is I was like, I knew some people might.
Yeah. They're like,
what? But what?
They're all from Haas or Aston Martin or.
Yeah, right. No, like I'm naive, sure, to have believed that people weren't going to be that. Like, I'm the naive one, not them, because I didn't think people were going to be that dumb. Dude. But I can't. I'm still catching my breath from the number of messages. And then, like, people will message and be like, "That's not true. That would never happen. This is a lie. It's like this is a scam." And I was like, "It's a scam would imply that I've asked for your social security number or that there was any action item."
Yeah,
who am I scamming?
Your caption says, "What's your favorite kind of tire?" Mine's satire, and literally nobody takes the time.
Also, that if they're presenting that it's a scam, that means they have something to lose. So
I didn't ask for anything
to lose in this circumstance.
Pride and some shame.
Oh my god.
So I posted it on Instagram first with that caption, and then I reposted it on TikTok with a completely different caption that was like, it's an IQ test to see who actually reads the caption. And then I detailed everything I just shared with you in the caption. I was like, oh, we manage these show cars for Red Bull. And so after the race, I thought it would be fun, you know, blah, blah, blah. Which was great because then the people who did read the caption went in the comment section and they were like, they were the warriors. They were anybody who was like, this isn't true. They were like, clearly you didn't read the caption. It was like, whoa. I'll just like,
oh my God.
I'm a Homer Simpson right into this bush, dude.
Yeah. Isn't the internet great?
Combined 5 million plus views between Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah, for a thing that I recorded to send to my friend. I wasn't even going to post it. I was like, oh, this probably is in poor taste. Like, Red Bull probably wouldn't want me to post this because it's obvious. And I sent it. He's like, no, you should totally post that. I was like, yeah, okay, fine. So I posted it. And then
visibility. Like, it's.
Yeah. And it's also, like, good. I think we both were like, no, surely people will think this is funny.
Which they
did. Most people did. But man, and it's pretty consistently people with like 3 to 150 followers who say the most violent, obscene, hateful, like just such a fascinating, it's just the amount of pain that some people are in their lives. Like the best thing that they do is to just say,
use this outlet to channel
something.
Human psyche is not a normal thing that we get into on this show. So,
well, that's all I talk about. So yeah, that's like 90% of my work. I mean, literally like we, in our, the first 20 minutes of being at Rally Ready, we talked to you about the amygdala and why your brain is doing what it's doing and why it's hard to understand, because your brain thinks you're being chased by a lion and the repetition creates comfort and normalizes this, in which case it allows your new brain to be able to join your old brain, and like the neural pathways and why we do the clutch and the brake back to back so that you don't replace a neural pathway, you add a parallel neural. So that's, yeah, the psyche and the human condition is an integral part of most conversations for me.
See, all I just heard was why I should go spend money down there. Like, that's, yes.
Let's go, yes. Dude. It's PayPal at rallyready.com. Just send it over, whatever you'd like, well, however much you can send.
And it's not so much for myself, because I'm at least at an age where, like, caution is a part of everything because I've got four mouths to feed. But, like, for the 15-year-old that has started driving and for the 12-year-old? Shit, I don't even know how old he is. Yeah, he's 12 because he plays 13U baseball. Ross, their birthdays move. They like
their birthdays throughout
the year. The ages change.
Also, I have 25% of the birthdays to keep tabs on.
Yeah, so. You have one kid. Like, I got it. Like, even I know when her birthday is. I know it's a summer birthday. Come on, dude. But processing in their minds, like, I want them to think about this shit, especially as they're behind the wheels of like.
Well, they have to. I mean, it's like, you know, the old saying, if you want to win, hire Finn, is because that Scandinavian driver's ed is 2 years of doing all of this stuff. And like that, we all know we could spend a long time talking about the lacking components of the American educational institution at all levels, but
that's an entire other podcast series, but yes.
That is something that we've become, it's one of my favorite things we get to do is like, as we have all of our friends in the industry who are like, hey, my kid's getting of driving age. Can I just put them on a plane and ship them to you for a day or two? You know, it's like, especially for my like really close friends who I know the kids and we've, you know, I've been around them for their whole lives. It's a really fun rite of passage to like be the place where I'm like, yeah, they can come stay with me and like stay with me and Chrissy in our house down the street, or they can stay at the ranch. And we'll spend 2 days doing, you know, like I had my friend send me his kid once, and a kid like wasn't super interested in driving, super nice, really shy. And like, you know, we'd do some stuff and then, you know, it'd be some things and we would just drive around. And so I put him I had an automatic, you know, Ram dually. And so I put him in a 6-7 dually and we're driving around. I was like, all right, throw it in reverse and we're going to back up. And he goes, oh, I hate reversing. And I was like, oh, you hate reversing, huh? And so we did our entire slalom and our entire like half mile infield course in reverse 4 times. And he was just like, and I was like, I know you thought I was like the cool uncle until now.
Yeah.
And I promise you. And then we parallel parked a dually like 20 times. And every time he'd get it right, I was like, we're going to play a parallel parking game where every time you get it right, we shorten the space by a foot. And he kept doing it until finally, like when the spot was like, you know, 4 feet longer than the truck or something, he finally managed to bonk a cone. But it's so fun. Like I love the fact that that's something that we can do. Again, like I take for granted, as we all do in our own respects in life, right? Like you take for granted the vehicles that show up and you get to, oh, this thing's this and that, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh yeah. We all remember very well the time that we were just so stoked to have a car that had functioning AC.
Yes. Like
last week.
everybody with any privilege or luxury whatsoever in their lives takes something for granted.
Oh, we take everything for granted. Everything is taken for granted. And part of what makes humanity so functionally good at being humans and so good at growth, development, evolution, whatever, is the fact that we are so quick to scale and normalize anything we experience. We were recently given all kinds of declassified information about whether or not aliens exist. And 30 minutes later, we're like, yeah, okay, cool, whatever. Government has aliens. Nobody gives a shit. Nobody fucking.
Nobody was like,
Nobody groceries cares. And gas. Groceries and gas. They were like aliens, and we were like groceries and gas. Like,
yeah, pretty nobody cool. called me and was like, "Bro, the aliens, dude." Never happened. Nobody cared. Nope. Like,
the Reddit subs and posts went front page for about 12 hours after that happened, and then it just went back to
And like, I mean, my personal favorite version of this is the Louis C.K. joke where, you know, he's on the first flight ever with in-flight Wi-Fi, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing!" Everybody claps, and then 30 minutes later, she says, "I'm sorry, we had an issue with the Wi-Fi. You know, it's but you know, you guys, hopefully it was good." The guy slams the laptop. This is bullshit because he has a sense of entitlement for something he didn't know existed. Yep. 30 minutes early, yep. Right? Like, it is such a fascinating, and for car people, it's the like, it's whatever thing. It's like it's horsepower. Oh, dude, if I just oh, that'd be so rad to have a fast car, and you get an STI, and you're like, it's the fastest car that ever existed. And a week later, you're like, God, that thing's slow as fuck. I need to do a turbo swap.
Dude,
no matter what we do, we are insatiable. Yeah. We're perpetually dissatisfied. And there's a version of this that's not just humanity, but then there's the athlete version or the race car driver version, which is the mark of true genius is at an absolutely insurmountable and mental health issue scale, perpetual dissatisfaction at any level of success. There is no point at which Lewis Hamilton has been like, God, what a perfect season. That was amazing. Yeah, every single thing. We won 15 out of 16 of the past, you know, 16 races, and we almost had all 16. And like, that's what makes us good at what we do. That's what drives us. And it's also what makes us fucking miserable.
16 ain't shit anymore, apparently, but,
yeah.
But yeah, no, it's anybody with, there's a threshold for perfectionism and desired performance. And once you cross that line, that's it. It's over. You know?
Yeah.
Next line.
There's nothing else.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, it's next line. I mean, it's the thing. It's like you stand on top of the mountain and you're like, oh, fuck. Well, now I've done it. Now I've climbed Everest. What the fuck do I do now? Right?
Right.
Like, that's
right,
version of that, and
that's why people end up doing the fucking what's that the documentary, the guy that did all seven of the highest peaks in a certain number of hours, and
well,
then
you asked about Pikes Peak, and so like taking it a step back, last year I was really fortunate. I'm wearing my old team shirt from last year with General Tire and Black Rifle and my own company on it. I was really fortunate to get the opportunity to go run an entire season of rallying at a very high level with a big budget, and we did it in a really, really like grassroots car because we wanted it to be a really grassroots campaign. Mm-hmm. We had budget to run, you know, a Rally 2 car, which would now be basically a top spec car, and we were like, no, we're not going to do that. And I went into the season super excited. I was like, all right, we're going to do this. It's going to be awesome. It's, you know, I've worked 20 years in this space, and I've earned myself a seat, and I, you know, I know I can, like, this is going to be great. We're filming a show with Black Rifle.
Jesus.
And I'm like, this is it. We're doing this. And it was the most miserable year of my life because the function of a championship is that you defer any level of satisfaction or joy from the individual event to the championship. So you're not allowed to be happy with or stoked for an individual outcome. We don't celebrate an event and go, dude, that was an awesome rally. That was super fun. We go, okay, but we crashed at the last one, so we're still behind in points. And you don't get to enjoy any of it. And I recognize, obviously, like, it's a mindset. That's not accurate. Like, I can choose. Mm-hmm. I have the agency to choose how I feel about that.
Appreciate it and enjoy the moment. And that's important. You're doing what you want to do is a big thing. But it's hard to live in that second when it's
your
big picture.
You're doing what 17-year-old you wanted to do, and you're not allowing for the fact that it's possible that you might have changed your mind, or that the fact that other people look at that and go, that's the best thing on planet Earth, you should feel lucky. You know, like, we live in a space where we, like you said, we're all privileged. That doesn't mean, like, Brad Pitt's still allowed to have bad days, right? Just because he's a total, he's going to still have a bad day, right? It's, your net worth does not dictate your mental health. We know that. Yes. Nor do any of the other variables that all of the rest of us look at anybody else and go, man, that wouldn't that be nice?
Homie's and better looking on his worst day than any of us are on our best. So
that's for sure.
That's not
that's
nice.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we can't all
I
have.
I got a weird nose. Come on.
I did this whole season,
pretty.
and I was miserable, and I didn't enjoy it, and it was it's not to say that I had a lot of fun, and there's a lot of individual moments that were great, and I'm really grateful for it. And there's a million good things I could say about it. So it's not a, I'm not whining. I very quickly realized that I built something, which is our rally school and the rally ranch, that was so good and so tailored to what I love. And it was so satisfying to be in a space where everything I did was creating a bounty that I could share with people, that it's like, do you like cooking for one, or do you like cooking for your family? And going racing is cooking for one. And it's like, you get to make this amazing meal, and there's all these people who are a part of it, but at the end of it, it's the Travis show, or it's the Dave show, or, you know, it's the Chris show. It's whoever the driver is. That's the, you win, you lose. You're the center of all of it. And it's your race, especially because I was managing the whole team. And so
a team sport becomes an individual sport when all of a sudden.
Yeah. It doesn't, right? But like, even in F1, right? It's still Lewis Hamilton at the end of the day who wins the championship. Nobody really pays that much attention to the Constructors' Championship. We don't really talk, and I'm not saying it's like that's, it's not that that's nobody
nerves.
Cares about it.
Nerves, and that's where it starts and ends for.
But that's it. Like, at the end of it, we all, over time, we're all. Sure, we may have the statistician brain may remember the constructor, but our emotional championship is the driver's championship.
Yeah.
Because we see ourselves in everybody else. We see ourselves in those drivers. So it's always about the human, and you always have to funnel it to a single person.
Mm-hmm.
And so Pikes Peak this year, that's what Pikes Peak was like for me. It was miserable. I did it for 11 years from 2005 to 2015, and it was miserable. And I hated it. And I'm being hyperbolic, like, obviously I kept going back, but I was going back like a junkie, not like somebody who was going to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that part, I mean, truly, like, once I realized my relationship with this was not about the joy and excitement of going and doing it. It was like there was an insatiable expectation or need. So, I have a really awesome friend named Melissa Eichhoff, who, I met when she was managing partnerships at Yokohama. Some years ago, and I got a message from her that she was like, "Hey, I'm executive director at the Pikes Peak Hill Climb now." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is the best news ever." Cause that's one of the things that was really challenging for me of being at Pikes Peak over the years, is that organization is, you know, just functions on it's kind of done the same thing for a really long time. And there's some challenges that have come up for competitors over the years, that, you know, sometimes just didn't get met with a team of people who really wanted to solve it. And I'm not speaking disparagingly of the organization or the event. I think they've done an unbelievable job to grow that event up. I think keeping that alive through the paving years was an insane challenge.
Especially
I was there for all of it.
Now that it's all tarmac and like,
yeah,
half of the appeal in the pre-full tarmac days was that it wasn't. So,
yeah. Well, it was the gravel hill climb was amazing.
It's become the intermediate American Nürburgring. Like that's the equivalent that they've actually managed to do, which is huge. Yeah. You know,
and it's incredible, and I'm super stoked. You know, for the organization, I didn't feel very welcome there, and Melissa being there, I knew was going to be like, she's the right person to bring about some of the things that I was really worried about safety wise when I was competing. So I opted to go back, but I was like, okay, how am I going to do this in a way that heals some of that past experience where lingering, it's like in my DNA that it stressed me out. You know, it was just like the feeling of everything was, besides the fact that we have to get up at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning for a week straight, it's just stressful. So my buddy Cole, who started Sierra Cars, look, little baby, 2005 baby. That was my first year, the old Type R. Yeah, there you go.
Tiggy,
huh? The W's. So I went back with Cole. That's his personal Sierra Alpha. So the Sierra platform is a single seat. It's sort of meant to be the like Swiss Army knife of race cars. It's good on in the dunes, it's good on the dirt, and it's awesome on tarmac. So the Alpha that he has there is a 500 horsepower turbo Hayabusa in a 1200 pound chassis, basically, with, you know, big wing in the front, big wing in the back, and big sticky tires. So
fucking god,
yeah, it was real violent.
That's not like power to weight ratio where you're like, oh yes, C7 Z06 has power. That's power to weight ratio of just kill
it's mode. Violence.
Yeah, that's...
Well, it's funny. I'd never even sat in it until we rolled it over the scales at... Like, I've driven Sierras a lot, but I've never driven the Alpha. So my first time sitting in it was over the scales at Tech. First time driving it was the middle section, which is the W's. And so I literally climbed in it and I sat down. I was like, hey, it's still up for first, right? And they're like, yep. I'm like, all right, see you guys later. And it took me like 5 practice runs to even remotely figure out like the power band and what, because it's so peaky, obviously, being a Hayabusa.
Yeah.
But dude, it was the most fun week of racing I've ever had, because I just kept telling my team, first off, I picked every person there on the team to come hang out. I was like, look, I want to be around a group of people where, you know, inevitably when the car breaks or something happens, I'm still stoked. And mm-hmm. I want to spend the rest of the week with all these people.
Yep.
And also I need to have a partner, a sponsor who comes into this, who like, we have a bigger partnership so that that doesn't become, you know, if we have an issue, they're like, oh, this is, you know, so our friends at RG Nets, who, they do like the, networks, Wi-Fi networks for hotels, airports, but basically revenue generating networks. We're building a really incredible network at our ranch together. And I was like, hey, do you guys want to, you know, be on the car for Pikes Peak? And so we're like, yeah, great. And I was like, great. So we printed the wrap, showed up to Colorado and put the wrap on them in our Airbnb, as you see there. and I knew, I was like, look, as long as we get a couple of good shots from Larry Chen of this thing going up the mountain with their branding on it, like we're good. So we did our first pass. I drove past Larry. I was like, that's a week, boys. We're good to go. So the whole rest of I was like, dude, it's a track day. This is a track day. We're going to have fun. I'm going to drive as fast as I feel comfortable. If we have issues with the car, we park it because it's Cole's personal car. I'm not going to blow it up.
Yep.
And we ended up, Cole was there with he has a power stroke, 6-liter power stroke swapped R35.
Oh, wow.
Take your time on that. Yeah. So he has a
6-liter.
What?
Yep. A 6-liter. Yeah. Yeah. A 6-liter power stroke powered GTR. I raced his Sierra Alpha. Lucy Block was there in the new electric Sierra Echo. And then Leah was in the Huda Pegasus. And we made it through the whole week. We had an awesome time, just like amazing family time all week. And come race day, I like an idiot, I forgot that it's not a rally car. And so I accidentally completely boiled the brakes 2 miles from the finish. And I had no brakes for the last 2 miles. And so I wanted to break 10 minutes and I got a 10.04. It's like I threw away 4? Like 30 seconds. Yeah. So
could you which take is just like, funny. Like 2 seconds roll out and 2 seconds.
Oh, many seconds of rollout for many corners after the brake fade. I was just pumping them down the straight trying to get them to come back. And anyways, I get to the top. Cole makes it up in the GTR. He sets his, you know, his personal best in that car. 10.04 was my personal best. And then we sit there and we wait and we wait and we wait, and Lucy comes up and it's like the waterworks for all of us seeing Lucy. And I mean, for me, I've been with Sierra for 5 years watching the development of this car, and we've been dreaming about an electric car since we first drove the Sierra. And so seeing that car come to fruition and then seeing Lucy drive it and seeing Lucy make it to the top of Pikes Peak, which Ken wasn't able to do, and the three of us all sharing that moment. And then we went inside and we ate lots of donuts and hung out. And then we stood there with our arms around Lucy while we watched Leah take off the start line, and we watched her whole run. And then we all walked out together and we sat there and watched Leah come across the finish line. And I mean, I get goosebumps. I can barely keep it together talking about it. It was one of the most powerful and profound and important moments that I'll ever get to be a part of in racing. And it was like, oh yeah, this is why we do this shit, right? It's like, I'm not doing this. Like, I don't give a shit about my, like, I've long since forgotten my, you know, bummer. I didn't get a 9.59. Like, okay, life goes on, man. Like, my identity was so tied to that number and that outcome when I was a kid, you know, when I was back 10 years ago racing, because I didn't have anything else. And I just kept believing that if I just did better in a race car, then that would be what people would like me for. And I built this other thing that I'm so proud of, this community we have here now, where like, we drive race cars for fun, not because it means anything. So Pikes Peak was really magical. And there's a Sierra put together an incredible documentary that isn't released yet of that story with Lucy. And have some Kleenex for that one. It's pretty, Cole and I watched it at my house, and like we finished and we were both like, all right, well, I guess we'll complain for like 15 minutes. Sweating. Go back to the ranch and tell everybody you have allergies.
Yeah. So. Dude, we talk about this up and down like over and over again. Like, it's not the cars, it's the people. You know, and this is one of those instances. I tell people all the time.
Yeah. Nobody gives a shit about cars. Nobody gives a shit about cars. I'm sorry. Nobody fucking cares about cars. Nobody cares about cars. We like cars for what they symbolize. We like them for the way they make us feel. Yep. We like them for all these different things. But all of those are because they bring us into a sense of community. They put me on a podcast with, you know, two of my friends like to talk shit. Uh-huh. And with fucking Karate Kid over here. And, you know, a sultry Karate Kid. And
take it.
But like that, the reality is all of our best memories. I mean, again, like Ayrton Senna, dude, like that was the most important moment in like automotive history, was when we all watched that. And I think we all hit us right in the gut when Ayrton's best, you know, he says his favorite memory in racing is karting. And that's like, he's universal.
Yeah.
Like, you talked to Vettel, he was at our place last year, and he was like, this is what he loves. Like, he just wants to, like, the stuff he gets to do between events. George Russell was here this year in the new Ineos Grenadier thing, doing a whole shoot. And his PA messaged us shortly, or his executive assistant, sorry, his EA messaged us and was like, hey, George would like to come back on Monday and just like rip some shit around, because he doesn't get to like drive stuff off road.
That's awesome.
And it's like, at the end of it, we all, like, those of us who get, you know, are fortunate enough to do all this cool stuff, the cooler the stuff is that we want to do, the more we just want to go do hood rat shit with our friends. So,
dude, I'm going wheeling in New Hampshire next weekend with my friends, and I'm looking forward more to having a meal and some beers with them afterwards than I am the actual time on the trail. And like, That's our world. That's our community. That's our people. You know, it's powerful, and it says a lot that we all come together the way we do, you know, whether it's on our tiny little podcast here or, you know, a collective of a huge number of people on Pikes Peak. It's
Well, even that same thing. I mean, Pikes Peak is, you know, there's 50 of us on top of the mountain on race day, you know, 70
just the drivers at the top, right?
Yeah, more than just that,
drivers, probably. Man. And like, well, it's drivers, and then it's whoever shows up in the Cog Railroad and has no idea what's going on, and why all these men with the dollars are all like sitting together eating donuts and watching.
Oh, dude, the people get like in the Mount Washington area are just like, what is this? It's just like all the off roaders coming together, and everybody else is like, so I'm not supposed to be here in my Camry. You know,
that just like that just gave me like such a big brain. I don't even know what it was. Like, they don't close the Cog Railway during race day?
No, of course not. Why would you? Because they like so that's one of the biggest challenges for Pikes Peak, is that's why we have to be on the mountain at like 3 o'clock in the morning, because we only get to use the road from sun up, like the moment that there's enough sunlight to safely run, cars are on the road. We have to be off the mountain, trucks, trailers, drivers, everything off the mountain when they open it to public traffic at 9:30. So and it used to be a little more flexible, but it's like, no, now it is rigidly off. I mean, they're bringing in, you know, whatever, $50,000 a day plus on toll booth fees and all that. And the Summit House is huge. They're like, the top of Pikes Peak now is this massive building, and it's a huge operation. And so, you know, to shut the place down is 50, like to rent the highway is $50,000 a day. So if you're going to shut it down, we get one day. And so we don't get to have, you know, pass after pass. We get one shot on race day, and you get all your little sections for practice days. You get one shot to string it together, and they're sure as hell not going to shut down the Cog Railway as well, because that's who's buying all the shot glasses and snow globes. So it's like, you know,
and stickers. And that's
just buying all the donuts. Yeah.
There's an opportunity for somebody to fly a drone.
Like up the Summit House is literally like, you know, little post office roped off, and like there's all the drivers sitting around eating our sandwiches and donuts, and you know, eating some horrible gluttonous food that we've all been putting off eating for 2 months until we was off Pike's Peak. And
those
and
3 pounds kinda, matter, dude.
Yeah, and everybody's kind of like starting to get that, you know, between the oxygen deprivation and the exhaustion and the whole week catching up and then the adrenaline wearing off, we're all sort of nodding off, you know. And yeah. It's great.
I glanced at the videos of the testing that you guys did. What exactly happens when you either do a run or do some testing and then decide you have to go to the raceway and put in some, you know, some test efforts at the race? What is it in Colorado Springs?
So PPIR, Pikes Peak International Raceway.
It is like Colorado Springs. It's like,
yeah, it's a half hour south of the Springs.
Yeah.
Like 20 minutes. So, for what? So inevitably throughout the week, you get your practice runs in the morning. Pikes Peak is not a kind place for race cars, right? You're, you know, 15% grade in places and no oxygen. Cars are pissed off all the time. And most of the people were building their cars in the trailer on the way to the race, right? So it's like the cars show up. They're all one-offs. Like for the most part, these are a lot of one-off cars that are built for this race.
SEMA 2.0.
Yeah, Bluetooth drive shafts not included. You bring it up. You do the middle section practice in our case. You say, okay, you know, found some issues or we're overheating or whatever it is. You make some tweaks, some changes. You go down to Pikes Peak International Raceway. A lot of people, Romain and Ford's, the super van, they had two vans. So they had an entire separate van that they were just running around PPIR all week doing data and testing and burning laps and trying to figure out optimal battery settings and discharge and all that stuff. And so that whole affair is its own chaos, right? Like, so we're basically just making setup tweaks. And for me, I just never driven the car. So I like, you know, I went down to PPIR a couple of times. We did some tire testing, some setup, tweaked suspension a little bit, like nothing major. Just wanted to get really comfortable in the car. For us, it was like, do we want to run sway bars or not? You know, like really, really simple setup tweaks and just plain getting seat time so I can like push the car somewhere that there's not a cliff. Mm-hmm. So like for me, PPIR was rad because I could come in, be really aggressive under the brakes, slide the car around, get on the throttle early and like see how aggressively I can step it up and loop it somewhere where I'm like, all right, got it. That's my limit.
Explore the limits in the controlled environment.
Yeah, exactly what we do at the rally school, just somebody else's track for once.
What'd you decide with sway bars? Out of curiosity.
I have no idea. I don't remember. That data has long since left my brain. Whatever it was fine.
In the crawling world, that is a massive, massive decision.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's we were disconnected front and rear at one point, and I don't remember what we hooked back up. But yeah, the super van I think is violent, and that like dude, the sound of that going around PPIR was terrifying. So it's like imagine if all you hear is a dog box and the aerodynamic sound of a 777 like flying directly over you. It's just. It's like crazy, violent whooshing and just
buttholes clenching. Yeah, yeah it's
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
A lot of ducking, like it's a close air support raid or something. It just
yeah.
Also, yeah. PPIR is not that far from. There is an actual base, like there's just like north of that.
It's the Springs, dude. It's the Air Force Academy. Yeah. It's everything. Like it's
NORAD, brother.
Exactly.
Giant mountain.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, right.
Where we kill everybody like from.
Five, yeah, they got like five extra presidents hiding in that mountain. They just
in
they
case. Just thaw
out. Yeah. Just in case they thaw one out and put them in.
Hugh,
put a USB.
Hugh you know, Bush and American Dad. Port. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Dude, the back of the van is even wilder because from the side, it just looks like, oh, that's a normal van. No, it's not.
So,
would you call it
Van Wilder?
Yeah, they definitely figured out how to make a van like actually an interesting
that looks
aerodynamic
like
an machine.
AI generated. Bleep, 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 bleep. Yeah. Super van.
It's pretty wild, dude. And I'll tell you, it worked. It worked real good.
It worked real good.
But not as good as Robin Shute.
Huh? No.
Uh-huh.
Nothing works as good as Robin. That dude crushes.
Yeah, that.
You guys should have Robin on. That dude likes to party. You want to talk weird tech? That's your guy.
All right. I'll add it to the list.
I'll text him. I'll text you guys right now. I'll just
make it.
Are we wrapping the show up? And Dave's texting me for some people to talk to.
Well, no. I just, you know, it's that kind of party.
We can't.
I always want to make sure we have new guests.
Tangent, rally, rescue.
Tangent, as if everything else was so on top of
it. We followed our perfect trajectory that we have with every show and every guest.
I would say we followed the Dave trajectory per normal. Yes,
yeah,
we did.
Yeah.
It's more air hockey than ping pong.
yeah, fair.
Rally, rescue.
Yeah, so we still haven't done much officially with Rally Rescue since COVID started. Our shelter director left, and so we just kind of, you know, went about our Rally Ready things. We've been rescuing a lot of dogs. Oh, there it is, Robin. So dude, that car, real quick, put that thing back up. We should talk about that real quick. So Robin's
sorry, Ross.
Show us.
Welcome back, Ross, I promise.
Yep.
Here's what I love so much about this car and this whole program. Robin came as an engineer with Faraday and was like, oh yeah, this would be cool, I should do this, and came back and then was like, I'm gonna get a Wolf and just like do this thing proper, and bought a Wolf sports racer. And then every year, like, this is what I love so much about this program, is I used to tell people, like, back in the mixed surface days, that was when like grassroots teams could really be competitive. Mm-hmm. You know, a grassroots guy could come on and like really incorrect. Yeah, you can still do that, because Robin shows up with like five of his friends, and this is all his design. He's a brilliant engineer. He's also the tech director for Nitro Rallycross, and he just like designs and builds this whole thing. And I show up to his Airbnb, which is the bottom story of somebody's house where the people are still living, and they just love them. And like, oh yeah, you guys can just have downstairs. And there's just like all of our Pikes Peak years, air mattresses everywhere, and like, he doesn't know how many people are even staying there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got like this insane talent pool of the most talented people in their respective niches, all downstairs with a bunch of fucking Milwaukee power tools, cutting holes in the side of his car and adding sprayers and vents and all kinds of bullshit the night before it's supposed to be on the mountain, like after Fan Fest. They're just like, yeah, doing some last minute tweak. It's like, this whole operation is as grassroots as it gets, and he's won, what, 4 out of the last 5 years, or 5 out of the last 6, whatever it is. It's insane. It's fucking incredible. So that dude's a fucking hero.
Yeah.
Hook him with up. Let's make that happen.
Yeah, that thing smoked Ford's factory effort. Like, get out of here. That's insane.
Yep.
That's absurd.
Hey.
It's an angry man with the last name Ford somewhere.
Yeah, no shit. So dogs. So Rally Rescue, we got Rally Rescue moving again. We're not doing anything officially under that name right now, but we're just about to kick that back in gear. So we have, I think, currently in our foster network. So Chrissy, my partner, found all of the dog people in our neighborhood, and she, this is our most recent find. Oh. But this is on top of the mother and like 6 puppies, I think, that we have in foster care.
Oh my gosh!
What kind of this dog is blind and deaf. Although awesome news, we found out 2 days ago that dog has some vision in one of its eyes. Which helps understand how it like really integrated with the pack really quickly and has been doing really well. And like, these are all just dogs we find in this area, because again, people's relationship to animals is its own thing. And
that's some crazy Texas stuff, like where you got, that's, you know, you're,
I mean,
you're,
it's
doing
a lot of the
noble
world.
Like,
yeah,
God's
a lot
work.
Of the world.
Yeah, this is more common in the world than it's not, you know. This is a problem we've created and have yet to find a solution for, but yeah, so it's been cool. I mean, it's really nice to have a foster network. We're still able to grab any dog we find. My team at the ranch is helpful and really kind and supportive and helping where they can. And then we've just built a really good foster network, so we can quickly get them into foster, and then we place them really quick. Look at the babies.
So, puppers.
It's been pretty great, man.
Yeah, my always been, you know, appreciative of people who do this stuff. And given the state of the world, you know, realizing what those who take in not just pups, but people and animals of any species of need, it's really, you know.
Yeah. Did you, it's you about got me with Lucy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Pictures, Chris,
years ago, we had a, years ago we had a dog that looked, was the exact same brindle. So that this, you about got a road trip down on that one.
Yeah. She was a special little nugget. It's, you know, I think again, like the only real currency that we have, my grandfather passed away a few weeks ago. He's 94 and we were really, really close. Always. I mean, have been for a long time, but the last year of his life, we were really close. And I spent a lot of time with him and we had an amazing relationship and he died very peacefully in his sleep. And like, you know, it was, I mean, like a best case scenario for everybody, our whole family, we're having a big celebration next week. And it's, there's just like, we know this and we know it intuitively, but nobody sits on their deathbed and talks about how they wish they had, you know, spent more time in their finance. And nobody talks about even their hobbies. Like really the only thing any of us ever talk about is that we wish we had spent more time loving more people and things more proactively and not being as afraid, right? It's usually generally where people get to at towards the end of their life is they wish they were less afraid of things. And sometimes, yes, they wish they were less afraid to take risks and go do the things they wanted to do or whatever, or tell people how they felt.
Yep.
But it's like, it's just the thing that we have that we all have access to that doesn't cost anything is love, and it's accessible and pretty easy to get to. There's a lot of internal walls that make it really hard, especially hard to talk about. But like that for me, like that's what the dogs are. They're an easy place where, you know, you come into an environment. I mean, coming to a school of any sort is a really vulnerable act. It's saying, hey, I'm going to spend a lot of money and I'm going to come in humbly and sit and I'm going to
hopefully take your knowledge and your hopefully
wisdom. Yeah. And even if your action or your attitude, Marge is literally doing exactly that about 2 feet from me with her tongue sticking out right now. But the act of sitting and learning is the act of the humility of saying like, hey, I don't know this and you do. So I'm really excited to take this information. And yes, of course, there's people who in the moment they're like anxiety creates this ego environment. But like if you show up, that's an act of humility. Mm-hmm. And like our job is to reciprocate that with creating a comfortable environment and ultimately with love. Like that's all that we can do. And that to me, like that's what dogs are. They're a space where when those people come in and they're nervous, they're uncomfortable, you know, where you're taking this big act of vulnerability and you're afraid to sit with other men and lead with love and lead with, you know, opening, being really open and asking questions. But when people walk in and there's a dog there or there's dogs, they just turn into a drooly, bubbly, you know, little baby. And they can't come back from that. Once you've disarmed yourself and you've like crouched down on the ground and you've baby talked any creature, you can't then stand back up and be like, anyway, so forgot to tell you guys how huge my dick is. Like it's gone. That whole experience is gone. That the opportunity to be that guy no longer exists. Good. So like not just having dogs around, but the act of caring for dogs. And like, look, we all, to have any values and live in this world means to be a hypocrite. And that's everybody. It's universal. Whether you want to talk about Israel and Hamas, or you want to talk about, you know, your environmental concerns, and then also talk about the new tires you bought and like, you know, your big giant diesel truck. Like it is to be a hypocrite, the human existence. So like, to argue with your friends about politics, so long as you can do that knowing that you're both fucking idiots and you're both wrong and you're both absolute.
The time you spend arguing about politics could be spent doing something about politics. It's hypocritical by nature.
Doesn't matter. Argue about sensible. It. Fine, but argue about it in a constructive way that's, again, from a space of love where you're not trying to convince somebody that you're right and they're wrong, but you're saying, oh, man, yeah, that makes sense. You know, this is, I kind of ended up here because whatever. But like, I argue because you can argue with people you love in a way that's constructive. But the point I think is like, for me, the dogs have always been a place where it's an easy place to say, look, if we see a dog and it needs something, we're just going to figure it the fuck out. And sometimes it sucks and it's really painful and it's really expensive and it's really miserable. But again, that comes to that privilege of like, when I started the rally school, I didn't know how I was going to be able to pay for fuel for rally school sometimes. Like, I genuinely didn't know when class was coming up if I had enough money to pay for the gas to put the class on. And now I'm in a position where if we find a dog on the side of the road, I'll take it to the vet and we'll pay the bills and I'll figure it out later. Mm-hmm. And like that privilege, the ability for us to do that is like, it's a place to stay in gratitude and stay really centered around like what an awesome opportunity that is for us to be able to do that. So, and it's also, it's so impactful for so many other people. Like people get to send $40 in or $20 and know that they played a role in doing something. And like, that's a gift to be able to give people to live vicariously. And more importantly, be able to take part spiritually in doing some good. And that if we can do a little bit of that, then fuck, you know, hopefully we can solve something if only our own internal bullshit.
Right.
Oh God. I'm going to have adopted a rescue dog by the next time we record a show.
What? I've got like six. So
I was like, homie, you have the pick of the litter. You just got to drive a long way to go get it.
No, it's worth it. You got a lot of good press.
What kind of puppers do you have? Cause I have a very small child. Gosh, so
I got it. You're what?
I have a very small child. So I'm, and also a very, very small house. So
yeah, I was going to say, yeah, don't.
I can't have I can't.
Ross. Let's see.
What kind Leo of dog is that?
Tommy.
Leo and Tommy. They appear to be some version of Hound.
Buster, Bubba, and Curly.
Dave, text me.
Those are all, Ross, those are all Beagle derivatives. They're going to be noisy. Honey, dude, if you got honey, you'd have a Reese.
Reese, come here.
Dave. Oh, yeah.
Come here. Dave. Come here. Text me.
Oh, yeah. And then this is their mom.
Just text me, because this is...
Yeah.
Come on. I don't have disposable income to spend on a dog, but if we can make this work, I can take a dog.
You got this.
I'll take a dog again. Oh,
Ross, this is why you need a honey, because then it would be Reese's friend.
You know,
hi, Dave's Reese. Not looking up.
Hi, Reese.
Oh, there's a baby.
Hi, Reese.
There's a baby. That's too good.
Yeah. You're gonna cuss at me later because I woke him up for that. So,
you don't wake Marge up. I woke Marge up earlier, so we have all these squash in my garden. I'm still eating like half of my diet is still squash. I'm turning orange. And I roast all the squash seeds because they're like pumpkin seeds. And Marge was sleeping and she was having her little. And I held a roasted squash seed in front of her nose. And she's like,
I was like, you smell like dad.
yeah, they're my squashes.
Yeah, you have so much squash.
It's insane. It's a lot of squash. I still have like eight squashes growing. Yeah, man. It's
Dave squash.
I'm making squash salsa.
Dave squash.
Squash soup. I just had squash like mashed potatoes for dinner tonight. When we finish out here, I have to go finish the like it's a like a pumpkin sized squash. Okay. I have to finish
squash is vegan. Generally pretty fucking delicious. So
yeah, you can't squash fucking rules, dude.
You gotta fuck it up for it to be bad.
I don't know how you play squash, but
all right. Hey, real fast, I'm going to wrap up the show and hit stop recording. You guys can keep talking about squash, but I think I can hear my wife calling my name. So
Dave's going to text me about doggos.
Yeah, I probably also need to go put my squash away. Oh my God, it's 10 p.m.
Well, good Lord. My wife and baby have both gone to sleep again. Long hours ago. So
yeah. All right, we'll wrap this party
up. I'm good to text about puppers.
Yeah, you can rate, review wherever you listen to podcasts, like and subscribe on YouTube. Oh, follow Dave at Rally Ready or was it Texas_Dave? Either account is a good follow.
It's charged.
Hooniverse is a real Hooniverse on Instagram. What is that, Ross? An that RC thing?
The something of mine.
None of those are words, Ross. None of those are words.
I was going to say, this is my shaft.
Do you have a stroke?
This is my shit.
I thought you were having a stroke.
Honestly, I'd sleep.
Take this footage to your doctor to review.
I would sleep better if that was the case.
I'm going to say thank you to Dave so I can stop and hit
stop on the recording. So thank you, Dave.
That's probably a good idea. Yeah.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Ross.
Thanks, we're Dave.
We're just going to call the other room and tuck him into the puppy.